It's been kind of a quieter grain trade on a Monday, but there's a lot of factors that are going to be weighing in, including playing off those headlines of last week. Good afternoon. You're listening to the American Ag Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. Brian Split joins us today with agmarket.net, and definitely quiet feel to the trade action. Do you think we just kind of overexerted last week as we played off those headlines going into the weekend?
Yeah, Susan, it sure seems like it. We had a pretty sizable move in soybeans late in the week. And, you know, if you look at a November soybean chart, we got very close to the low end of the range. There's been an uptrend on November soybeans that really goes all the way back to December of a year ago. Those were our yearly lows last year. And from that point, we had the lows in April, and then again, we tested them in August. So we got within, 6 or 7 cents of that trend line. And then we had the post on social media from President Trump, insinuating that we would have something good for soybean farmers coming after speaking with President Xi Jinping of China in the next several weeks. So that got some algorithm buying. And it kind of just took us back to the middle of the overall trading range, Susan. If you look at the highs that were made in August and then the lows that we made here at the beginning of October, 10/28 is the halfway point. We got to 28.5 and just kind of stalled out there. So I think the market kind of ran its course for the headline. Now we'll see if there's any harvest pressure. We're getting to the point where there's I'm taking a lot of phone calls from producers that are selling, you know, some soybeans out of the field, and they want to look at maybe some paper ownership with some call options further out in time, just in case there is a trade deal that's agreed to, or if La Nina starts to spin up some weather concerns for Brazil. So that seems to be kind of the common play. But as far as where are we right now in the soybean market, we're smack dab again in the middle of the overall range for the year.
What about from a corn perspective? You and I were, before we started today, talking about a little bit of a head and shoulder bottom going on.
Yeah, so there's a potential head and shoulder bottom. And I think that would run really counter to the current fundamental picture as far as what that bottom would measure to if it validated itself. But I'll speak relative to the March corn contract. We had had some lows that were back in mid-July, 424.5. That would basically be your left shoulder. We had a bounce from there up to 447. Then we came back down, made our contract low. That was down at 410. Then we ran right back up to 449. That 447 to 449 creates your neckline. And then we dipped from that 449 back down to 427. So that would be your potential right shoulder. So now in order to validate that pattern, we have to go up through the 450 level. Now, coincidentally, 450 is the midpoint of the whole move for the year from the February high to the contract low. So breaking above that would be a technical breakout that would effectively measure right back up to the February highs. And so, again, that runs counter to what the current fundamental picture looks like, because we just had a quarterly stock report where we found out, hey, there's a little over 200 million bushels more old crop here as of the beginning of the marketing year than what the USDA was projecting all the way up until the September WASDE report. So that gets added directly into the carry-in. And then it also gives you the idea that, hey, if that miss was because of a lack of feed demand, which makes sense, then that suggests that the feed demand that's on our new crop balance sheet is way too high. Could be 600 million bushels too high. It's probably at least 200 million bushels too high, and we'll see how that goes throughout the course of the year. But, the idea of the charts forming a bottom suggesting that we might go up to the February highs, really, in order for that to come to fruition, we have to see the yield come down rather aggressively in order to not only gobble up the additional carry-in, but the demand from the feed side of things that we feel just really isn't there, but it is on the balance sheet at this point.
So how much bearish talks will we see continuing into this market trade?
Well, and maybe that's why the market seems to be trying to form a little bit of a low. I don't know what else is out there to add to the bearish news flow. We had all of these acres that we added over the last couple of months, right? So you get your June acreage report from the USDA, and then August and September, we add what, a little over 3 million acres. So now we're harvesting 90 million acres. So, you know, check that box as far as, all right, that bearish information has been dealt with. I think we've seen the high yield print, right? And we got that back in August. So now when the USDA goes from trend line yield, makes a big yield jump in August from trend, but then immediately in September lowers yield, I think that would suggest we're going to continue to see some revisions lower in yield whenever that data comes out, right? That's a whole other element of this, is we don't have a government program to provide reports right now if the shutdown persists. So, you know, when does that news hit the market? And I have a feeling the market's smart enough where if yield is significantly lower than where USDA told us it was in September, it'll be able to price it in. I don't think it needs the USDA to tell us that.
Do you have any feed concerns right now as we look at demand going on?
Yeah, I mean, again, the feed part of the balance sheet for new crop is what looks off. And generally, if the USDA is going to reduce production by way of lowering yield, as a matter of protocol, especially if there's large revisions lower in production, they will offset part of that, you know, to an extent with demand revisions. So the category that everybody's going to continue to look at is the feed demand for corn. And again, that all goes back to, you know, what was the implied feed demand from last year based on the quarterly stocks that we got. And if that was, if the miss was from feed, because we knew that the inspections for export ran very well. We exported a lot more than we thought we were going to at this time a year ago. But the amount of animals, especially when you look at cattle inventory, obviously cattle are doing what they're doing for a reason. And the USDA really didn't bring down the feed demand last year after we saw the quarterly stock report fast enough. And so, again, the implication is, all right, well, now the USDA's got a number that's about 600 million bushels higher than what it seems like our last year's feed demand was. So, you know, can we increase year over year? That's question number one. And, you know, question number two is if it's roughly static year over year, then there's a problem with that balance sheet that really needs to see yield come down significantly in order to gobble into that lost demand.
But hasn't there been kind of a pattern that you guys have been seeing as you look at this start of the fourth and final quarter of 25?
On the cattle side of things, the pattern that we had, and this really started at the beginning of the year, we really started to see buying at the beginning of the quarter. Now, in the first quarter, we saw spurts of buying where it was like right at the beginning of the quarter, you'd see a wave of buying, and then you'd pull back a little bit. And through the whole quarter, we kind of set a shelf of support through that first quarter. Now, in the second quarter, which began in April, that was a major run higher that lasted 2 months. It was 2 months of buying right at the beginning of the second quarter. And then from there, we pulled back a little bit in the last month of the quarter, consolidated for that month. And then in the beginning of the third quarter, we saw another wave of buying that came in right at the beginning of the quarter. We made the low on July 2nd. And that was about a two-month move again. And then we kind of consolidated as we got to the end of the quarter. Now here we are, October, the beginning of the quarter, and the technical setup is very similar in cattle. You've got the 50-day moving average was cradling right under the futures in December cattle at the beginning of the July rally. And so now the 50-day is cradling right under the lows that we have right at the beginning of October. And today we are starting to see some pretty aggressive buying come in on both the feeders and in the fat cattle. So we haven't made new contract highs yet. We haven't taken out any of the short-term downtrends from that last month of consolidation. But the way the chart looks is if we do, you know, we could be in store for another wave of buying that could last 2 months. That's the pattern of buying. And then maybe you see some consolidation into the end of the year. But I think the scope of the buying that we could see, you know, you forget how much we went up from July to the end of August. I mean, it was a very, very aggressive run. And, you know, to tack on another 50 to 60 bucks if this thing got going again, I don't think would be out of the question. Now, again, demand, consumer demand, stock market, that's a whole other conversation that can always come into play. But I'm just talking what the pattern is and what we've seen from the funds every beginning of the quarter for the last three quarters.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much. Brian Split joining us today. He is with agmarket.net. And a quick reminder, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss not suitable to all investors. That's the Monday market wrap-up on the American Ag Network.